The first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Brackets, brackets, brackets. Hello, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. You're on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush, and Phil, it is that time, the time we've been waiting for about 12 months, I would say. Another shot at March Madness for Marquette. The bracket is out, and I am excited to talk about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's here. This is the real season now. This is the juice that we've been wanting to squeeze for quite a while.
I'm sure you have all seen the brackets and probably even filled one out by now. We will get to the bracket in just a minute, but we are going to start just talking about Marquette in general. And, you know, Marquette had this week in mind this past week and the week before, Phil, when they were resting Tyler Kolek. And I don't know about you, but every morning the past week for the Big East tournament, I was waking up expecting to hear Tyler Kolek is out. I never expected to see an announcement from the team that Tyler Kolek was going to play last week. And I think it's simply because that they know that this week is more important, and the fact that they have the big picture in mind honestly has me feeling as good as possibly I can be at this time of year.
Right. No, I think absolutely. I think the objective all along was, hey, let's get Tyler ready and able to play in the NCAA tournament. That's when you need him. That's when it matters. The Big East tournament, while fun and entertaining, and I didn't care about it until I started caring about it, it wasn't the time to bring him back, especially, you know, that UConn game as an example. You know, there was reporting or insinuation that Tyler has been cleared medically to return to, you know, basketball activities. But why run him out there without having a chance to practice and really test it out and do all those things? It really doesn't get you anything, because if we had beaten Connecticut, great, we got the trophy, whatever. It wouldn't have impacted our seeding. We'll get to it, but based on the way the committee did things, I don't think that anything this last week mattered even a little bit. So, you know, maybe we could have saved Stevie and Oso too if we had known that. But no, I at no time expected Tyler to play. He didn't. The team played pretty darn good anyway, and as a consequence, now that Tyler will be back theoretically with the first game, this team may be really ready to do some damage.
You know, when you look at the six games without Tyler, loss at Creighton, loss at home against Connecticut, win at Xavier, win on a neutral over Nova, win on a neutral over Providence, loss on a neutral to Connecticut, that could have been the exact same result with Tyler.
Right.
Couldn't it? I mean, it's certainly not a stretch, and honestly, probably likely that if Tyler played, Marquette could have had the same results. So I don't think Tyler missing time hurt Marquette at all. If anything, it may have actually helped absorb those losses, and the committee looks at, yeah, well, they lost those games without Tyler.
Right, right. Well, yeah, I mean, are there any games? There's probably an argument that if Tyler's available for certainly the Creighton game, because that score is way more lopsided than that game actually was, there's probably an argument you got Tyler in that game, and you know, that was without Oso, right? Because he Oso was out sick as well. So maybe that's a game that flips the other way. But short of if we had won at Creighton and had won one of the two Connecticut games, maybe we're up to a one seed. But anything short of that, we would have been right where we were. So to your point, not having Tyler didn't hurt us, and in fact may have helped us, because it masked, quote unquote, the performance if we had had Tyler in those games and had been full strength in all those games and had the same result. We might have ended up a three seed. So, you know, I don't think it's all doom and gloom that Tyler missed. We also saw player development, right? Like Trey Norman, Zaid Lowry. Maybe they're not ready to be full-time contributors, but in the Big East tournament, they stepped up. They had buckets. They had defensive stops. Zaid Lowry had what, four or five blocks in the Nova and Providence game, right? Like he, you know, and Trey Norman looked like, you know, a guy who can get buckets when he needs to. And That's going to serve us well, whether it's in, you know, the NCAA tournament or it's in, you know, next season's team. Like, this is development through the Big East tournament that's going to serve well.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And, you know, if they can bring the same intensity that they showed without Tyler, when Tyler comes back, then the whole team is just better overall. You just don't want them to dial it back because Tyler is back. But yeah, I think that bodes very well. But if you look at what they did without Tyler Kolek, loss at Creighton, loss at home to Connecticut, beat Xavier, beat Nova on a neutral, beat Providence on a neutral, lose to Connecticut on a neutral, they could have had those exact same results with Tyler. So if anything, like having those results without Tyler may have just saved our feelings from losing those games, because we can just brush it off and say, oh, well, we didn't have Tyler. So we maybe just feel better about that overall. But, you know, it was funny watching during the Big East tournament. While we said we didn't care, but once we got into it, we really did care. And, you know, the players did too. But, you know, as fans, we're watching that. And, you know, I think my friend John Casper had a funny tweet, kind of summed up my feelings during the Providence game. He was like, I'm going back and forth between saying a loss wouldn't be the worst thing to standing on an ottoman screaming about a win. And, yeah, that's kind of how I felt about that, too. Like, once they started playing, yeah, like, we all really wanted to see them win. And I kind of wanted that for them because they played so hard. But they didn't, and it's all right, and they got through it without, hopefully, any major injuries. I know they're a little banged up. Especially Stevie Mitchell. I thought Stevie Mitchell really took a pounding in the Big East tournament, especially the Providence game. He had some rough screens, looked like he hurt his shoulder. I mean, that Providence game especially was really rough, wasn't it?
Well, so was the Villanova game. And like, I don't want to complain about like officiating specific to Marquette, but this is something I have a real issue with the Big East, in the let them play, let them be physical. That's Big East basketball. Okay, all well and good. And Tyler Kolek's injury had nothing to do with, you know, he just, that was a weird tweak, right? But like all of Marquette's injuries, with the exception of Tyler, have been the result of physical contact plays. And again, I'm not saying, hey, you know, non-contact, make it a very safe sport. That's not the thing. But like, if you look at some of the plays, like Stevie got absolutely trucked by Bamba in the Nova game. Like, you know, I think Paint Touches was the one that tweeted out the video and said no decapitation, no foul, right? And like you said,
I mean, if that happens in the parking lot, it's assault.
Right. And the, in the Providence game, just ridiculous. Odoro is just a ridiculous brute, right? Like, and just had some ugly screens and some other things. And again, I get that the rough style of play is a Big East staple, but like half our team has some sort of fairly significant injury. And, you know, we only got three of us in the tournament. We want these three teams to go far. So it seems counterproductive to let our teams just hammer on each other to the point of doing like literal damage. And then, you know, expecting these teams to go far. Now, having said that, I get it. The officiating is the officiating. But those Villanova and Providence games were just, and, you know, and I think it's just they're, like, they don't have anything else, right? Like, they don't have a ton of talent. They don't have a ton of style. And so, you know, brute force is the order of the day. Because you didn't see that kind of thing in the UConn game.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between letting them play, as the expression goes, and mm-hmm. allowing it to become football.
Right.
Like, and just ignoring really brutal contact and guys going, you know, swinging elbows and, you know, laying their shoulders into guys and just saying, ah, that's just good hard basketball. No, it's not. It's a foul.
Right.
I mean, call the fouls that are fouls. Like, letting them play means that we're not going to call ticky-tack stuff where they just, you know, graze a guy on the arm, or, you know, there's just a breeze on him in the paint. We're going to whistle them for a foul. Yeah, I thought it got a little too physical, personally. And, yeah, I would imagine Stevie Mitchell might have had an, you know, ice tub on the plane as he flew back to Milwaukee. I hurt for him just watching some of the hits he was taking in that game. I hope he's going to be all right this week. And I'm glad that Marquette got a Friday-Sunday site.
Yes.
That's what Indianapolis is. I will take every extra hour I can get from Marquette for rest this week. I know the team feels the same way. They probably appreciate they're starting on Friday this week in Indianapolis instead of having to start at a Thursday site. So that's just one extra day at home, an extra day of rest and rehab for injured players, especially Tyler Kolek. One extra day to prepare and get ready for everything. So, and that extra day of rest is going to be crucial, I think. For what it's worth, Shaka Smart did tell the CBS sports crew on Selection Sunday that Tyler Kolek is going to play in their first game. And so if they were being coy about injuries or whatever during the Big East tournament, no reason to be coy anymore because the tournament's set. They're not going to change the brackets at this point. So if he says he's going to play, I believe him. I believe Tyler's going to play, and why not? We've talked about it on the pod before. Now is the time to tough through an injury and just give it your best shot and see how it goes, because the next game Marquette loses is going to be, in all likelihood, the last game of Tyler Kolek's Marquette career.
Right. Yeah, and you know whether Stevie's banged up or whatever, I have to presume that they looked at Stevie and said, you know, hey, you're not going to make it worse. You're going to be fine. You're going to get through this. You know, go ahead and play. Same with Chase Ross, nagging injuries. They did sit Oso in the last 7 minutes of that Connecticut game. Largely by that point, the game was out of hand, but they also said, hey, Oso had banged his knee and they were holding him out as a precaution. Get that maximum rest, but you better believe all of these guys, regardless of the knocks, are going to play, because this is, you know, we have somewhere between 1 and 6 games with this band together, and this is the last ride for this band, right? Tyler, Oso are very, very likely gone, and who knows what else happens, right? But those are the two for sure that won't be here come next year, because I think they'll both end up going to the draft in some capacity, or maybe, you know, Europe or whatever. But I think it's safe to say that their Marquette career will end with whatever the next loss is. So it's going to be all hands on deck. Leave nothing behind, and Tyler's been kind of posting, if folks follow him on social media, on Instagram, I think he's a bit tongue-in-cheek, he's a bit pointed, but he is certainly leaving breadcrumbs saying that, like, you know, he's coming back, and he's coming back with a vengeance, right? Like, this is, you know, there's references to Story's Not Over, and, you know, things are loading, and all this stuff. So Tyler's going to come back. He's going to play, and we're going to see what this team that's now developed, you know, they kind of had a right hand, right? Like, if you think of a boxer, I'm right hand dominant, right? Which is kind of funny because most of the team's left-handed, but, you know, right hand dominant. We can win these couple of ways, or we can do these couple of things. Now Tyler goes out for 6 games and essentially 6 weeks, or excuse me, 3 weeks. And now they kind of have a left as well, right? So they can, if Tyler needs some time to ramp up against Western Kentucky, I'm not worried about it, because Tyler can get some bench for a little bit, and the rest of the team can kind of win anyway, right? Cam Jones has proved he's not the same level of point guard as Tyler Kolek, but I'm also not worried about Cam Jones as a point guard. Unless, are you?
Not really. No, it's just a little different. He's more of a scoring point guard, obviously. I mean, that's his thing. I mean, it's what he's always been ever since he's been at Marquette. He's always had a point guard next to him who could get on the ball. But when asked to be a point guard, I thought he handled the role well. And, I mean, he's even done that in small spots when Tyler just, you know, needed a break and just went to the bench for a couple minutes. He's done that too. But, yeah, I thought he did fine. And also, you know, Stevie Mitchell picking him up there, because Stevie brought the ball up and ran the show a little bit in some of these games. But, yeah, I thought Cam did fine. And if he needs to do it more, he'll do fine. I think he can certainly do fine against Western Kentucky.
Right.
We'll talk about the matchup here in a little bit. But yeah, I thought, you know, a kind of a preview of what life is like without Tyler. I didn't love it, but I thought the team handled it well.
Yeah, I agree. I think it makes me less afraid. And again, hopefully, you know, as Shaka said in that interview with John Rothstein and Gary Parrish, where he also nuked John Rothstein a little bit, you know, he said Tyler's going to practice Tuesday. Assuming he progresses well, that he'll be dressed for Friday. He didn't explicitly say, oh, Tyler's going to going to start and he's going to play 38 minutes. But you got to believe that if Tyler's dressed, cleared to play, he is going to play. The fact that he said
Tyler is not in pain anymore.
Correct.
Was encouraging to me. It's just right now it's about precaution and rehab and restoring whatever strength he needs in that oblique, right? And
right.
So yeah, we're going to see Tyler this week. I'm 100% confident in that.
Yep, absolutely. I agree we will, and it'll be great. It's going to be good to get everybody back on the court and ready to go, and this is why you fight like hell to get a high seed, right? Like a 2 seed in this situation gets us a Western Kentucky, right? A 15 seed. Not that like 15 twos, and I know you have literally every 15 that's ever overturned or ever beaten a 2 memorized, but you know that, so there's risk in the 15-2. Not, you know, yep. It's not unheard of. But this is why you work this hard to get that 2 seed, so you get an opponent that you should be able to beat. And while maybe not easily is probably not the word that the committee's looking for, you would hope that this is a matchup where Marquette can win comfortably.
Yeah. You know, you never want to speak in absolutes when it comes to this tournament, because we have now seen literally everything happen, including a 16 seed beating a 1. So, in the words of Michael Scott, I'm not superstitious, but I am a little stitious. I don't like to invite the karma that comes with saying something like, there's no way my team could lose this game, or something like that. Because there are ways that can happen, of course. Especially, as you mentioned, 15 seeds are more dangerous now than they have ever been. For the longest time, I mean, there were no 15 seeds. The first one ever was in 1991 when Richmond defeated Syracuse. And there were only 4 in history up until 2012. And whatever year it was that the tournament expanded to 65 and then 68, I forget exactly what year that was, but 2012 was after that. There have been 7 since 2012. And there have been 3 in, there's been 1 in each of the last 3 tournaments. And not only has there been 1 in each of the last 3 tournaments, a 15 seed has won at least 2 games in each of the last 3 tournaments. ORU won 2 games in 2021. They upset Ohio State. Of course, everyone remembers Shaw Holloway's St. Peter squad back in 2022. They got all the way to the Elite Eight, almost got to the Final Four before being knocked off by North Carolina. They upset Kentucky in the first round. And then last year, Princeton defeated Arizona, and they won a 2nd game. And like coaches that you would think would be immune from a 15-2 upset have fallen. Coach K lost a 15-2 game. Tom Izzo lost a 15-2 game. John Calipari lost a 15-2 game. Jim Boeheim was the first one to ever do it. He lost a 15-2 game. It is possible, yes. And you know, now that said, yes, Marquette is a favorite in this game. KenPom has it as a 15-point spread. I think Vegas is similar. I think I saw 14.5 is the line.
Yeah. I saw on one. I saw 15.5 on a website.
Okay, so 14-15 points.
Yeah.
14-15 points is the line we're looking at. And again, you never want to speak in absolutes or welcome any kind of bad juju. But the fact is, Phil, there were a lot, and I mean a lot, of upsets in conference tournaments this year, and teams that otherwise, you know, not only weren't favored to be in the tournament, but really were far from the best teams in their own league making the tournament. And for that reason, like, I think some of these 14, 15, 16 seeds are a little weaker than they normally would be. That said, anything could happen. Fairleigh Dickinson shouldn't have even been in the tournament last year because Merrimack beat them in their conference final, but Merrimack a year ago was not eligible for the NCAA tournament, so their spot went to Fairleigh Dickinson, who beat Purdue. So anything can happen, but Marquette is the favorite in this game. Western Kentucky is, they finished 3rd in Conference USA. They went 22-11 on the season. They finished 8-8 in CUSA. They actually lost their last 4 regular season games. So they were 8-4 at one point, lost their last 4, then all of a sudden flipped a switch in the Conference USA tournament, won 3 straight, now they're in the tournament. They are in the show. I don't know how much scouting or research you've done on Western Kentucky at this point, Phil, as we record this on Sunday night. I definitely have not watched a Western Kentucky game this season, but they are 132 in KenPom, so not terrible. I mean, they're way above DePaul, so there's that. way above DePaul.
Which also Shaka did in that interview, speaking of DePaul, just real quickly, he said UConn had probably the best season in Big East history, and then said DePaul was probably the worst team in Big East history. So, you know, good for you, DePaul.
I mean, that's not insulting. That's just the facts.
Yeah, right. Not criticism, just facts.
Yeah, not criticism, just facts. For what it's worth, Western Kentucky is above Georgetown, also in KenPom. Georgetown is 202. They're actually very similar. They're right in between two teams Marquette beat in the non-conference. Notre Dame, which was 126. St. Thomas, which was 146. So Western Kentucky is basically right between them at 132. Looking at their KenPom page, Phil, the number one thing that jumps out, boy, they love to run. They play fast. Yeah. Number one in adjusted tempo. So, now Marquette likes to run. Marquette, they can play fast. You mentioned playing with your right or playing with your left. I mean, Marquette can win games different ways. So if Western Kentucky wants to run, Marquette will run with them. But what jumps out to you as you maybe peruse some of the stats with the Hilltoppers, which, by the way, used to be Marquette's nickname way back in the day.
Correct, and was a destination for a former Tom Crean assistant, Darren.
Yeah, Darren Horn. Darren Horn coached there. Right, he was an assistant on the Final Four team.
Yep, and he was a coach at the Western Kentucky for a while. I think the thing that jumps out to me is, one, they play fast, but they play at such a breakneck speed that their turnover percentage is ridiculously high. And, oh, hey, look at that. What does Marquette do really well? Turn teams over. Western Kentucky per KenPom turns the ball over on 18.3% of their possessions. That's a lot.
That's something I circle. And also, look, this team does not attempt a whole lot of threes. They're way down there as far as just three-point attempts. I mean, they prefer to get the ball inside. But the thing is, they're not a bad three-point shooting team. They shoot 34.4% as a team. So that ranks them 151st in the country. So that's middle of the road nationwide. Marquette's a little better. They're 35.8. That three-point percentage has come up a lot, by the way, in Big East play. Marquette, as much as we were all, and I was as concerned as anybody about Marquette's three-point shooting, you got to give them credit. They got that figured out in Big East play. And they've shot the ball pretty well. I mean, they got two guys above 40%. David Joplin is at 37%. Even Stevie Mitchell, who, you know, granted his season percentage is still a little low at 28%, but he's been much better in Big East play. Chase Ross is shooting the ball well. Ben Gold is shooting it well. So I think this is a team that Marquette can outshoot. I mean, Marquette is bigger than they are. They're not like an elite rebounding team by any stretch. They're not bad, but they're not a team like Connecticut or anything that's going to give Marquette. I mean, they rate higher on offensive and defensive rebounding than Marquette does, but they're not so much better that, you know, you're sounding alarm bells, like, say, when you go up against a Connecticut or a Purdue or something like that.
Right, right. There's nothing that really stands out in the KenPom numbers that says, oh, hey, this is something I'm worried about from Western Kentucky. As long as Marquette doesn't let themselves get sped up, right, with the pace that Western Kentucky has, and Marquette's going to have to get back, right? Their transition defense is going to get tested in this game. But if Marquette
with Marquette, that is one thing I will never be worried about, is them getting back, either on defense or beating teams down, or they're able to beat teams up. Marquette is great in transition.
Yeah. So if Marquette can maintain that strong transition defense, I'm not sure how Western Kentucky attacks this defense, and I'm not sure how Western Kentucky kind of, you know, generates the offense it needs. Because again, if they're turning the ball over 18.3% of the time, Marquette is turning teams over 21% of the time. Like, they might have, you know, it might end up Western Kentucky is turning the ball over one out of every four time down the court. That's going to lead to a lot of extra possessions for Marquette. And even if Marquette struggles, you know, shooting, or if Tyler Kolick has to ease into the game, you generate enough extra possessions, you're going to get buckets, right? You're going to figure it out. So, you know, and again, to your point, Western Kentucky wouldn't even be in the tournament had they not gotten kind of hot against, you know, New Mexico State, Middle Tennessee, and UTEP, all of whom are worse than Georgetown.
You know, they the bracket fell their way, and that was just one of many conference tournaments around the country where, you know, top seeds were just dropping like flies, and that's why this bracket looks the way it does. You know, we're used to seeing those 12 seed, those play-in games, those last four at-larges play into a 12 line or an 11 line. This is the first time ever that both of the Dayton games have played into a 10 line.
Yeah,
and that the reason that is because so many teams that got automatic bids are worse than the at-large teams. So, like, you look through the bracket and teams like UAB and James Madison and NC State and Duquesne, these are teams that just have worse resumes than Colorado and Colorado State. So they are seeded lower even though they are in the 64-team bracket. And so that's why you see those playing games feeding into the 10 line. And again, for the first time, this is the first time that both of those playing games have fed into the 10 line. It's just because overall, the resume of this year's field is not as good as it has been just because of all those upsets. Now, that being that we may see some of them, that doesn't mean we're not going to see chaos in this bracket, because we always see chaos in this bracket. That's what we love about it, is seeing teams that we never thought could win anything upset somebody and go one or two rounds. But if you're looking at the resume of this year's field as a compared to past year's fields, it's just not as good.
Right. And what it means, and that's also why you saw some teams that arguably probably in years past would have been in, were not in, you know, and we'll keep it Big East centric, right? St. John's, Seton Hall, like, I miss me with Providence. First of all, their fans and their team can go pound sand. But second of all, they
tell me how you really feel.
Oh God. Listen, you know, Devin Carter stomped like a 2-year-old. I mean, I would expect better behavior out of my 4-year-old than Devin Carter when they didn't call a foul in that game. And Providence is just, you know, they were overly physical. They're kind of a dirty team. Their fans are atrocious. All that stuff. And I'm holding back. But, you know, Providence didn't belong anywhere near the conversation. So let's say it's St. John's and Seton Hall. I think those were the ones that were kind of surprising. But what ended up happening is, you know, like you said, all these automatic qualifiers that were quote unquote lesser than had to go somewhere in the bracket. So they all went in the 11 seeds and higher, meaning there were only so many seeds left, you know, in the top 40 where you could bring in at-large teams. And those at-large teams, then essentially the bubble shrunk because there were only so many excess seeds left. So it's like a top 40 and a bottom 24 is kind of how it's shaping up. Like you said, there's very much going to be chaos, right? That's just how this is. Any given day, any given team can win. But the bottom 24 teams are clearly, you know, at least by the metrics, by the eye test, are lesser than, you know, the bottom 24 we have seen in previous brackets.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe what you would have projected the bracket to look like a month ago based on who was leading their respective conferences. Those resumes would have been a little more impressive than, say, what we have. But we have good teams that are playing well right now. Maybe not some great teams, but some good teams that are hot. And those are the type of teams that are dangerous, right? Like a team like, say, like Oregon, who has talent but would not have been in the field had they not won the Pac-12 tournament. But they're in as an 11. So could they win a game or two? Absolutely. Of course they could. We'll see how this thing works out. But yeah, but to your point, the Big East got squeezed because of that. And that's why it's just, it doesn't seem right that the Big East only got three teams in. I understand why that's the case, because you just laid it out there. There are just only so many spots. And all these bid stealers just gobbled them all up and is like, sorry, Seton Hall, St. John's, we just don't have a spot for you, and punted them to the NIT. And I think they've even declined those invitations.
I haven't heard if Seton Hall has, but St. John's definitely, and did Providence declined the NIT.
Yeah, not to get on a whole like sidetrack here, but that's going to happen more and more because the transfer portal, I think, opens up on Tuesday. And I think most teams would rather get better by going into the portal and getting better players than having their guys that got them to the NIT get more experience. Look, we're just going to hit the portal and we're just going to punt on the NIT. It just doesn't mean as much. But the NIT, I think, is going to die. Very soon.
Yeah, I think it's going to have to. I mean, it was dying a slow death. And the irony is the NIT changed the rules to accommodate the power conferences. And the power conferences are like, well, you know what? Actually, thanks, but I'm out.
Yeah, we're passing. But anyway, back to the tournament that matters. What do you think of Marquette's draw overall, Phil? Top seeds, again, I'm sure many of you have seen the bracket by now, probably even have one in your hand. So Marquette is the 2 seed in the South. The number 1 seed in that region is Houston. Some other notable teams in this region, those Dirty Badgers, they are the 5 seed. Duke is a 4 seed. Kentucky is a 3 seed. Marquette is going to get the winner of 7 seed Florida, and one of those play-in games we talked about is either going to be Colorado or Boise State coming out of Dayton into that 10 line to play Florida. What do you think of Marquette's South bracket, Phil?
I think the initial reaction is I hate that we're in the bracket with Houston. That was of the 4 1 seeds. That was the one I did not want to get placed. Now, I do think UConn is the overall number one, but, you know, having seen them, could we beat them? I think we could, right? We hung with them. You know, there's an argument. There's, you know, 80 minutes of basketball out of, you know, 120 minutes where we hung with UConn this season. So I would have been okay being in their bracket. Certainly North Carolina, I think we could have beaten Purdue. You know, we saw it on a neutral floor. We hung with them and had a shot to go to overtime or could have won if things went the other way. Houston's the one that scares me the most. But, you know, maybe Buzz Williams will do us a solid and take Houston out for us or something like that. I was surprised to see Wisconsin in our bracket. So I don't know that I love that. But overall, I think at least getting to the Sweet 16, I think we have a path that's as good as can be expected and still be a normal bracket, right? Like, you're going to have to beat teams. You're going to have to beat a 7 seed. You're going to have to beat potentially a 3 or a 6 seed to get to that Elite Eight. So I think we have a path that's reasonable to the Elite Eight, but I don't know. How do you feel about the way the bracket shaped up?
Well, first of all, you just now made me realize there's a chance that we could get to Dallas and see both Buzz Williams and Wisconsin there. That'd be a hell of a thing. I would still wager that Houston's going to be there, but we'll see. It always jumps out when you see a blue blood in your bracket. Now, Duke is certainly talented. Duke and Kentucky both have a lot of guys that are on NBA draft boards, but I feel like, you know, the teams like that scare you a little bit, and you always wonder when they're going to play like an NBA team when they have so many NBA players. But if they haven't done it yet, there's a little optimism that you can get them. Grant, we got to get through 2 games before we even have to worry about potentially Kentucky, if Kentucky even makes it there. But Kentucky is just loaded with 5-star guys, and like their best one right now is Reed Shepard, was the least heralded of all of them. I think I saw a mock draft this week that had him number 2. I know he's good and I know he's had a great season, but God, Reed Shepard's going to go 2 in this year's draft? Yeah, I mean, he's damn good, but
a toddler in Devin Carter going in the top 10. So what do they know?
Yeah, well, maybe so, but, you know, if you would have said a Kentucky player is going to go 2 in this upcoming draft, they probably would have assumed you were talking about DJ Wagner, who I'm sure some of you fans of a certain age remember DeJuan Wagner, who was a great player at Memphis. Health concerns ended his NBA career, but he was a superstar for the Memphis Tigers. And so his son DJ is a great player, 5-star guy. Rob Dillingham is a very good player, offensive player. I think he doesn't play as much because they don't like the way he plays defense, but he can certainly score. But yeah, Kentucky is just so, so talented. But also, they they got a bunch of losses for a team with that many NBA players.
Right. And they don't play defense. So, you know, Rob Dillingham's not the only one that doesn't play great defense at Kentucky. Because that team
Marquette could absolutely take Kentucky. Yeah. Right. Yeah. NBA scouts would be watching Kentucky in that game. But Marquette could win that game if they do get matched up with Kentucky. Just because I think Marquette is a little more connected and more balanced offensively and defensively than Kentucky. And I agree with you that Houston is terrifying just because they are just so aggressive and so connected defensively. Didn't help them against Iowa State this weekend.
Right.
They got destroyed by Iowa State in the Big 12 championship game. That was certainly an unexpected final score, but I guess that happens sometimes in conference tournaments. You just start getting beat and you just shut it down and say, well, we're a one seed anyway. And so Houston, not unbeatable, but that would be a tough matchup. You know, again, if it happens in Dallas, I'm sure there will be plenty of Houston Cougar fans making the trip up north to North Texas. Just think about this, though. Like, if it is Houston, Duke, Kentucky, and Marquette, that is going to be a hot ticket. That is going to be a tough ticket at the American Airlines Center, and Marquette is going to be in the minority. I'm going to try to rally as many of my DFW Marquette alumni as I can to get out there if it comes to that. But man, we are going to be in the minority if that is the draw, because Kentucky and Duke have fans everywhere, and so they will just pour into Dallas for that. And then Houston, they have a huge alumni base, and so they would absolutely pack the American Airlines Center in Dallas. So, might not be a whole lot of gold. There'll be a lot of blue, but it won't be Marquette blue. There'll be a lot of Kentucky and Duke blue if those are the teams that get there. But, you know, I also was thinking, you know, I remember a time that Marquette started a tournament in Indianapolis and wound up in a regional where Kentucky and Wisconsin were both there.
That worked out well. Yeah, that seemed to do just fine. Fine with that one.
For those who don't know what I'm referencing, that was 2003. Marquette started as a 3 seed in Indianapolis that year. Got out of that region. They made it to Minneapolis for the Sweet 16 and Elite 8. They beat Pitt. Kentucky was playing Wisconsin on the other side. Kentucky won that game, and of course Marquette knocked off the number one Wildcats, and Dwayne Wade put up a triple-double. Memorable stuff. But I guess ultimately, Phil, can Marquette get out of this region and get to a Final Four? Hell yes, they can.
Yeah.
Is it going to be easy? Yeah. Hell no, it's not.
No, it never is, right? Like, I guess, yes, we can get to a Final Four. I would say the most, but I would put the expectation that a minimum we can get to a Sweet 16, right?
Right, I'm with you. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you know, we know last year that we lost to Michigan State, who just beat us. Tyler got injured, whatever. But, like, you know, yes, Colorado, Boise State, Western Kentucky, Florida, are any of them capable of beating Marquette on any given night? Yes. But you know, they all have their flaws. If Tyler is back healthy, if Marquette is relatively healthy and ready to go, like, this is a bracket that should favor Marquette. You know, they're a 2 seed. They have faced tougher competition than they will face in the opening, in the first and second round of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, I think in some regards it may be a little bit of a relief to maybe stop Big East play for a little bit.
Yep. And
maybe play it maybe a different way, because I don't know if Western Kentucky is going to play football like some Big East teams played last week and really for a good chunk of the season. Maybe a different style of game than Marquette has played, but I think they can handle it well. But yeah, I'm with you. Marquette obviously is a big favorite against Western Kentucky, 14-15 points. They would be not a similar, but they would also be a favorite against whoever comes out of that 7-10 game. Not nearly as much. Four, five, 6 points, depends on who it is. Florida is interesting. We may do squeeze in another, as long as Marquette wins on Friday, we may squeeze in a quick podcast, maybe Friday evening, get it out to you on Saturday, looking ahead to the next game, because I don't know if we want to break down three separate teams,
right?
Because we don't have, we have no idea who that opponent's going to be. But one thing that's notable about Florida is, if you saw the SEC championship game, you know they lost one of their big men to a nasty broken leg. Micah Hanglinton, he's a 7-1 kid. Doesn't look like he plays most of the minutes at center, but he plays a good chunk of them. And he is an elite offensive rebounder. He ranks 5th in the country in offensive rebounding percentage, according to KenPom. And he's a pretty good defensive rebounder as well. So that's a big loss for them, but they're still a good rebounding team without him. So if that, if it ends up being Florida, the rebounding is what would be concerning, even without that big guy that they lost.
Right.
But again, we can break down whatever the match, because Florida may not get past whoever comes out of Dayton.
Right. I mean, of the three, Colorado, Boise State, Florida, I'm probably the most, quote-unquote, worried about Colorado. I Florida's got some injuries. Who knows? They may have some dissension in the ranks.
That's right. There was something about that, too, wasn't there? Like, some dude left the team?
Yeah, somebody hasn't been playing the last couple of games, and it was insinuated. Riley Kugel. It was insinuated that he was putting himself into the transfer portal or something like that. So there may be bad vibes, with that team or whatnot. So, Colorado would concern me a little bit more. But that also, because again, Colorado, Boise State, like you said, the 10 line has the play-in games. So Colorado and Boise State play each other before they play, the winner plays Florida. So if whoever comes out of that game plays Florida and beats Florida, they would then be playing their third game in 5 days. And we would be playing our second game in 3 days. I like our odds of matching up against a team playing their third game in 5 days. So if it's anyone, while Colorado would scare me the most of the three, the fact that they would be doing so on somewhat tired legs, because Colorado's really good at scoring inside. They're elite from 3-point line, right? They're 5th in the country in terms of a 3-point percentage, right? So those are the types of things that would scare me. But again, if you're playing your third game in 5 days, maybe those legs are a little dead. You're going to have a tough matchup against Florida. Hopefully, if we can kind of win comfortably against Western Kentucky, we can rest some folks, right? Like if we can get Tyler 20, 25, minutes, something like that, maybe he has to play more. If he has to play more, he plays more. But if we can get Tyler eased in against Western Kentucky, and then we're going full bore against whoever that opponent is, again, we should be in a place where we can be successful. We're just going to have to see who the opponent is.
Yeah. So again, hopefully Marquette wins on Friday, and we'll get another maybe short podcast out to you late Friday, early Saturday, to get you ready for the weekend. But yeah, I don't know if I really want to get into predictions, Phil, because I think everybody out there knows what we want to happen, knows what we hope will happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope we have 3 more weeks of podcasts to bring you guys, talking about this team, because I know they're going to work their asses off, and whenever it ends, I know it's going to be heartbreaking, because this team is not going to lay an egg on us. Like, if they lose, it's going to be similar to some of the losses they've had lately, where they fought hard and just didn't have enough at the end, right?
Right.
This team battles. They're connected. Got a great coach, great kids on the team who fight hard and play hard. I'm just hoping it pays off for them, because after the heartbreak last year, I think they deserve a little more, but they got to go out and earn it. No one is going to feel bad for them and let them into the second round, third round, final four, anything like that. But I think they're ready for it. This is all they won since last season ended, almost 12 months ago now, that just give us another shot to get us back where we were and let's try again. And that's essentially what they've done. They've gotten right back where they were, a 2 seed, playing a 15, and they'll made a 7-10 in the next round, and they just got to do better than they did last year. And I think they'll be ready for it. And as long as health holds up, I think they will be. I am hopeful to see them join me here in Texas in a week.
Yeah, I think that's the thing for me, and you kind of hit it, is like, this team needs to go far because this team, you know, I personally, like, I have enjoyed the hell out of these last 2 years from a Marquette basketball perspective, right? The style of play, the approach, all of that stuff. And it's just been super fun. And just some of the wow we see out of Oso and Tyler and Cam and Stevie and David Joplin, like, it's memorable unto itself. But what I want more than anything for this team is, like, memories that will last in the consciousness of my 8-year-old son, you know, or, you know, kids around the country that are like, oh, man, I remember when Tyler did X in that NCAA tournament and they got to the Final Four. Or, you know, David Joplin hit that three in the Elite Eight to get them to the Final Four or whatever, right? Like, I really want nothing more than this team to put a stamp, you know, in the minds of the college basketball watching public that maybe doesn't watch the Big East on the regular, aren't a big fan. Yeah. I want this to be just a memorable run that everyone can say that becomes a marker, right? Like, 2003 is a marker for us. Like, there's before 03 and there's after 03. You know, and we haven't had a marker since then. Every marker we've had since then is, well, this person got injury, or if not for that, we would have had that, right? Like, even the Elite Eight team under Buzz, that was like, I don't know that it was memory. We certainly got to the Elite Eight, but it wasn't like expected, and it was weird, and it for me at least, it wasn't a marker in time.
I get what you're saying there. It did feel weird because, you know, it was memorable for me in that we had that shot by Vanderblue to escape Davidson, right? Now, a game that Marquette should never have been in danger of losing, but they were. And then all of a sudden, like, they were on the ropes, and all of a sudden they got hot from three in, like, the last minute of the game.
Right.
Pulled it out. Vanderblue hit an incredible shot. But, yeah, they did just get incredibly hot for a couple weeks, and then, boy, they just got flattened by Syracuse in that Elite Eight game. But to me, 2013 is a marker. I will give them that. To me, like, three straight Sweet 16s is a bit of a marker because that's hard to do.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not many teams do that. So, like, to me, yeah, those Buzz teams, that was a bit of a marker. Now, is it as high as a watermark as 03? Of course not. That's something everyone who was a Marquette fan at that time remembers. So, but yeah, like, I'm with you. You want that next marker because, like, that 03 team, it locks in a whole new generation of fans.
Right.
Like you were talking about your son. Like, if he sees them cutting down nets heading to the Final Four, that is going to be a lasting memory for him. Right. And for anyone who's just maybe kind of jumping on the bandwagon, whether you're, say, a high school senior who's about to enroll at Marquette or you're a freshman at Marquette right now, this, like, sets the bar for all your future Marquette teams. And maybe that's not fair, but that's the way it's going to be. You're going to be like, oh, man, I remember that time we went to the Final Four.
Right.
You know, we won a Big East title 1 year, and then we went deep in the tournament the next year. But, yeah, that's what I want. Yeah, not just for me as a fan, as a selfish fan for myself, but, like, for these guys who were so heartbroken that they didn't get to do it last year, and just for all the fans who follow this team, all the season ticket holders who have been there for years, and all the students who maybe did not get to enjoy as many great games a few years ago and now have stuck with them, have turned the page, and haven't had a big moment because they were too young to enjoy 03 or maybe even too young to enjoy 2013. I want this for them to have their favorite moment as Marquette fans. I think that's what we're all cheering for, and I think these guys are ready for it. So good luck to them. Get after them. Know you're going to represent Marquette with pride, and let's go Marquette. Let's get it done.
Yeah, let's Friday, 1 p.m., everybody butts in seats. We got a game to win.
Yeah, I already took the day off. I got comp days to burn.
I think I did this with malice aforethought, but I did look at my work calendar tonight. My Thursday is packed with meetings. Friday, desert. So I'm going to I timed it correctly. So, Friday I will not have a care in the world other than does Tyler look good and how much do we win by?
Yeah, the funny thing is, even though I work from home, I technically could probably get away with not taking a day off. But just the honor system, and just so it's on the calendar that, dude, don't call me. Do not call me and ask me anything.
Like, don't even try.
Basketball on Friday.
Yeah.
All right, anything else you want to touch on, whether it's Marquette-wise or just the bracket as a whole, Phil, before we wrap this bad boy up?
No, I think it's going to be a really interesting tournament. I'm excited for March. This is what we live for. And yeah, let's just go put that mark out there. Let's go put a Marquette stamp on this tournament. That's what I'm most excited to see.
All right, let's get it done. As always, folks, you can reach out to us on X, Twitter. I'm Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF23 at Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. Go to cracksidewalks.com. We post a podcast there. You can leave comments on cracksidewalks.com. And remember to rate, review, and subscribe, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. Be with us throughout the tournament. And again, if we drop a bonus episode here or there, you will know if you are subscribed. Phil, enjoy the games. I'm excited. I know you're excited. Let's go, Marquette.
Let's bring home at least a couple of W's.
Maybe at least, I don't know, six.
Five or six. I'd be happy with five or six. That's all I ask.
Yeah, let's do it. All right, folks, we'll check in with you next time, hopefully after a couple of wins. Until then, seashells and balloons.